This is the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. I want people to know that. I don't want them to tune into this podcast and think, what am I listening to?
Am I listening to the Mac Geek Gab Fest?
Absolutely not.
Are you listening to Mommy Beta? Nope.
Not that I know of.
Listening to The Trending Show? No, you're not. But these are all other fine podcasts on the Grizzly Productions Network.
What was that first one that you said?
Oh, that's not on our network.
Right. Yeah, that seemed like a lie, Clayton.
You would be surprised if that was on our network suddenly.
I would be genuinely surprised.
No, Mac Geek Gab Fest. It's hard to say.
So it sounds. Welcome to the podcast. This is a show where I, Mike, get together with Clayton, my favorite guest star on the in fact, he was recently promoted to co-host. You remember that? That was a special one.
I do, but apparently you forgot. Yeah, hey, what's going on, man? Hey, you know, there's some things I wanted to chat about today that I'm sure you probably saw in the superhero realm.
Oh.
You probably saw some of these. We'll get to these in a little bit, I would assume. But first, because I was listening...
Maybe not.
I was listening to The Trending Show this week, of which you are a co-host. I was listening to it on my way to the gym this morning. And,
hey, listen to this, quick. I think I am the host.
Right, you are the host of the...
And Natalie is the hostess.
Right, she's the hostess with the mostess.
She says co-host, and every time she says that, I get a little ticked off, because she's a hostess.
Whatever you do, don't smack her. She's my wife.
All right.
So anyway, but I heard this weekend that you were trending internationally, or Chikara was, for C-Rex.
Personally was not.
Right. I would like to see if we can get you trending internationally. You're Mike what are you, Mike Quackenbush on Twitter?
I am. I don't know how that would even happen. I don't really understand what makes that happen. And as I remarked to a few people, I can tell you what the result of it is. The result of it is you come home and there's no more money here.
Right, but see, it's brand capital. You might not be able to measure it in bags of money.
No, it's very difficult to measure.
Right. But though, for instance, today, right, E3, the big electronic entertainment expo, is launching out in Los Angeles this week. And I opted not to go this year. I'm too lazy. Because I'm going to go out to see the Big Apple event next week. And I can't be traveling with a newborn 2 weeks in a row.
Right.
But anyway, E3, the hashtag E3 is trending right now on Twitter. It's probably the top one. And I was watching it. You know, you can see it internationally happening.
Mm. Right. So. Now, can you make me understand? Because, for the reason, by the way, I'll give you some context here if you're new. The pro wrestling organization to which I belong, Chikara, had a pay-per-view event Saturday night from the Trocadero in Philadelphia. And the hashtag C-Rex, which is an abbreviated form of Chikarasaurus Rex, how to hatch a dinosaur, which in and of itself is a whole tweet, was trending worldwide. Now, larger wrestling organizations than Chikara, for example, World Wrestling Entertainment, make a huge deal on their broadcasts about when they're trending worldwide, that this is trending worldwide, or this was, you know, this blah, blah, blah. And then I remember reading a piece where... you know, I don't know if it was in a wrestling newsletter or it was on an online site or wherever, where they explained, like, the metrics behind what makes something trend worldwide. And it was actually not all that impressive. Like, to say that sounds really impressive, right? Like, for two straight hours, we were the number three trending topic in the entire world on Twitter, right? Like, that sounds like a big deal. But apparently it's really not all that impressive. Like, can you shed some light on that, Clayton?
Well, I mean, I think, obviously, if enough people are using the hashtag... C-Rex or E3, you're going to get it trending, you know, around the world. For instance, I have an app that I really like, actually. I just bought it not too long ago. The folks over at iPad Today had recommended it. My friends Leo and Sarah Lane had recommended it. And I thought it was really cool. It's called Springboard. Streamboard. I'm sorry. Let me just get the name right. So if anyone wants to download it.
There is something called Springboard. That is a real thing.
Right. I just want to make sure I get it right. It's called Streamboard. And the idea behind the app is, you know, you launch it on your iPad and you type in the search term that you want to watch unfold. So, for instance, if I typed in hashtag C-Rex during your live event, all I'm seeing is on my iPad right now just a stream of people commenting about C-Rex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're mentioning the hashtag. So right now I've got it up here on my desk because I want to watch what's going on with E3 and see what the announcements are from Microsoft and from Sony later today and from Nintendo and everything else. So I did a search. I have it hashtag E3, and I'm seeing tweets coming in from all over the world. But to answer your question, I think if enough people are using that hashtag, you're going to start to trend.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it may take a couple hundred people.
Right.
But, you know, that's more than I guess it's the hive mind, right? It's if a number of people are using that same hashtag, it's going to start to filter up to the top of the international search terms. So unless something is a little bit more popular, maybe Justin Bieber had a concert last night, and perhaps that's why he's trending so high. His tour, maybe the you know hashtag that his tour name, and that maybe that's why it's trending because thousands of people were there and they were tweeting that they were going to go see him, and he's, you know, he's got really crazed fans. But now, when you say like WEW trends, how is that trend? I mean, do you notice a big uptick on Twitter, or what are you seeing?
Well, no, I just mean when I was talking about the WWE, what I just meant by that is like they make a huge production about. You know, for example, during their build to the most recent WrestleMania, which now was 2 months ago, give or take, anytime The Rock appeared on Monday Night Raw and would say something that sounded like a new catchphrase, within minutes that new catchphrase was trending worldwide. Like, he could say any dumb thing. In fact, I think one of them one time, like, his catchphrase was, like, Fruity Pebbles. And, like, within minutes, that was Fruity Pebbles was trending worldwide. But, like, the real mechanics of what makes that happen, like, are somehow less impressive, right? Because you would think when someone says that, like the whole planet is talking about. No, like it's just a couple of people. It's just a couple of people using the right hashtag at the right moment in the right regions, and it creates that effect. Like it really is less impressive than it sounds. Having said that, I love saying that, right? Like these last 2 days, any chance I've had to say that to somebody, like you know, we were trending worldwide. You know, that's kind of fun. And it was really – what was fun about it, not after the fact. Now it's just because I want to brag. But when it was happening, like we had all these different dressing rooms at the truck and people were like running in, like holding up their phones like, look, look, like we're above Snow White and the Huntsman or we just topped Mean Girls or whatever the stupid thing was at the moment that we were – that more people were discussing. Yeah, I was like, all right.
Mean Girls.
So yeah, I don't know. Like – It's kind of fun, right? I guess maybe that's a really loose appropriation of the word fun, but it pales in comparison to the fact that I think we created an event that left an enormous positivity. It left a positivity on the other side of the curtain with the audience that was there. The theater was packed. The Trocadero was absolutely packed, and it felt like a great homecoming for us. Because we have been gone from Philadelphia since losing the ECW Arena, which is undergoing massive renovations all throughout this year. So we were back at home. There was a huge crossover from the Wizard World convention that I went to. And those are really like our people. You know what I mean? People that love nerdy type pop culture. I love comic books. These people love comic books. So these were people that came because, you know, they loved niche television series and cult movies and the superhero genre at large. Like that was so our audience, and it was really a lot of fun.
So right now I just I punched in the keyword or the search term here on my app stream board for C-Rex. I just wanted to see what people are talking about, and people still talking about it. Right now, 32 minutes ago, that was the latest tweet. Says, what's that? C-Rex from Chikara Pro finished less than 36 hours ago, and it's shipping? No way. Smart Mark Video.
That's true. The DVD started shipping this morning already. So, yeah, we did a really fast turnaround. I say we, but Smart Mark Video did all the work. Smart Mark Video turned that DVD around, and it's already shipping this morning with tons of bonus features and backstage interviews. So if you want the show, great. And you can still order it on GFL.TV. That was our pay-per-view provider. And like I think I was saying this to you as we were discussing this kind of peculiar trend thing, is that I felt like everything that was done to advertise and promote the coming of this event, that paid off the moment the event began, right? That the entire audience that showed up the moment that began are the product of the promotion. However, all the additional people that show up after the fact are probably the product of the buzz that it creates. Now, that's not perfect. You know what I mean? That's not an absolute, but I think that's fairly true. I feel like that's a good rule of thumb. And I think the fact that we've just continued to see, like, the buzz just growing and growing and growing, and I feel really, really good about that because certainly it has always been our goal at Chikara to make wrestling a positive experience. It needs to be fun. It should never insult your intelligence. It should be a good time. It's the kind of thing you wouldn't be embarrassed to watch with your parents. And it's not the kind of thing you'd be embarrassed to show to your kids. And if we can accomplish that, and like the overwhelming feeling of euphoria in the Trocadero as we were going about these seven matches that we presented on Saturday night, like that was the overwhelming feeling. And I remarked to some of my crew, because I really didn't have an opportunity to watch the show. I had a lot going on. I always do. I'm always like running around like a chicken with his head cut off during these kind of events. I wear many hats, so to speak.
You're a haberdasher. That's probably why.
I am. That's part of it. It's self-promotion. Like, I don't even have to look. I don't have to look out of the curtain anymore to know. I can just hear the crowd and know how the show is going. And that was the experience. And it really was. It was great. And I think the confluence of events with Wizard World, the fact that we'd been gone from Philadelphia for so long, it all kind of came together really, really nicely and made this into something very, very special. And seeing how many people have just come out and said, this has been the very, you know, you look up and down. There've been some monumental events this year, including WrestleMania, obviously headlined by The Rock and John Cena. And people who just said, hands down, this is the very best. This is the pinnacle of professional wrestling in 2012. And that's really, really, it's heartwarming. It's validating. You know?
Yeah, here's another tweet from the Felix Young. Just watched at Chikara Pro C-Rex. I laughed. I cried. I marked out. That was the best wrestling show in a long time. That was just came in about an hour ago.
So it was great. And Wizard World was fun, too. And it would have been a lot of fun if you'd had now, obviously, as you know, Clayton has a newborn. But I think you would have really enjoyed yourself because there were a lot of cool guests I think you would have liked to have met.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, just seeing some of the guest list and some of the cards, it would have been pretty exciting to be able to meet some of those folks. So grab the DVD. It's out now. And I'm sure on your Chikara podcast, Agogo, you guys will be releasing some different matches over there. And that's also a Grizzly Productions show, by the way. You can watch that at grizzlyproductions.tv. And that's what released, like every Monday or something?
You are exactly right, sir. Every Monday morning, like clockwork, for the last 319 weeks in a row.
Wow.
We've released a new podcast, Agogo. And they're always a little bit behind. Right now, we're showing footage from the end of April. You know, we always trail a little bit behind because there's so much we have to cover. But you can check that out. And even some stuff that's more current is floating out. For example, an incredible trailer that just gave me goosebumps when I saw it for the King of Trios, which is coming up in the month of September, was released on our YouTube channel over the weekend. And even though it's an original piece, the score under it, it sounds like a Hans Zimmer Batman soundtrack piece. Like when it started playing, I was like, oh my God, I was like, is this like Hans Zimmer? What is this? So, yeah, there's tons and tons of content over on our YouTube channel. And, of course, the Go-Go is a Grizzly production as well. So, and that's a great way to get a free taste of what we're all about.
Let me just say one more quick thing about Streamboard, if anyone wants to use it. One of the things I like about it, too, is you can, as you're watching sort of the worldwide talk about a certain event, you can say, hey, only show me users or tweets from users that have more than, you know, a certain number of followers. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
so you can filter out all the unimportant people.
Right. Or you can spam. Yeah. Unimportant and spam. Right. Like right. I have the filter set to zero. Only show me users with more than zero followers. And so, you know, maybe someone just created an account. They don't have a lot of, I don't know, they don't, maybe don't have a lot of influence. They don't have,
right.
Maybe it's a spam account or something like that. So you jack it up a little bit, then you're going to see people like with 600 follow, you know, Leonard F. Chikarison here is a, you know, is with some info, the Battery, Veronica. There's a lot, you know, a lot of people that have like hundreds of followers on Twitter.
Right.
So you can sort of, and location too. So if you want to see what people are talking about it right near the Trocadero, you can set the location within 1 mile, only display mm-hmm. one, you know, actually, this is a really cool idea. I've been to like a GDGT party or a gadget.com party like in Austin at South by Southwest, and they always do this. And I always wondered how they did it. But here's a great way to do it, and it might be cool for your next Chikara event, actually. Mm-hmm. And this is actually how you could probably get it trending again worldwide, which is to have a screen. I know you guys have like screens up on the wall there, don't you? With all sorts of video production and everything?
Sometimes we do, not all the time. It really depends on what the venues, you know, like this theater that we were in, it wasn't possible to get that done. But sometimes we do.
And if you get one of those like DLP projectors, you know, that just to put it up on the screen, you can put like a little tag thing underneath it that says, you know, like the, you know, Chikara trending or something like that, or Chikara on Twitter, and these are like real live tweets coming in. And then what you could do is display the tweets, you know, around. You could just click the world, 20 mm-hmm. miles, 5 miles, 1 mile, mm-hmm. and you could do it like who's tweeting within in the arena, or you could do it worldwide. And so people that are in the arena could see like what they're tweeting, and it goes up on the screen.
Mm.
You have to use the hashtag though, C-Rex, and so you could follow that particular hashtag, and that everyone in the arena is like seeing their tweets appear before everyone else up on the screen.
Mm.
So I don't know. I was at the gadget party. They do that. It's really cool because you're there and you're like, hey, I'm at the GDGT party, and pretty soon GDGT is like trending worldwide. You know, and they're getting a lot of buzz as a result of it. So it might be a good way to. You know, include the audience that way, where they can, you know, participate during certain matches, and you can watch the traffic. It'd be kind of a cool idea.
Yes. So let me ask you this. Now, obviously, some of the guests of honor this year. Now, you've met Stan Lee, who was clearly like the guest of honor.
Now you're talking about Wizard World.
Yeah. He was not at Chikara Zora's Rex,
which would have been awesome. What a coup that would have been.
Right. Yeah. If he would have just like wandered over, that would have been the greatest thing ever. Stan Lee was there, but you know, Stan Lee's been going to comic conventions for quite a while. He's not exactly new. However, among some of the real novelties, I think, Chris Hemsworth, who's Thor. In the Avengers movie, which is like the summer blockbuster if you haven't heard anything about it. He was there and clearly presented as one of the main people. And the collection of all the Star Trek captains that you got to that they were all in one place. You know, Shatner, Patrick Stewart, Avery Brooks, the woman whose name I can never remember. And Scott Bakula. They were all there. But
Scott Bakula was sitting off on like the kids' table. They had him off on the side.
They did. When I first went over Friday because Chikara had a booth there, and I was there for a while at the booth. When I walked by, they were kind of broken apart. And I thought, why aren't the captains all together? But I guess depending on who's going to be there when, they're constantly moving around where the guests are. So, for example, when I went Sunday – you know, after some of the headliners had been cleared out, like the area where WWE champion CM Punk was supposed to be, his whole section had been cleared out. You know, it was as if he had never been there. So I guess, you know, some of them were only there for really select periods of time. And part of that then, you know, as it kind of factors into the marketing and everything else, is that you have to buy a package, you know, like a VIP type thing, even to just like stand in the line to look at these people. Like, and they, one thing, you know, of course, because of the changes in technology, they were really vigilant about people trying to snap photos with their phones that didn't pay to be in the line.
Mm.
Like there was like the cell phone camera police were out big time.
It's like, how do you stop that? That would seem to me like a nightmare, right? Like
right. They did have people trying and they were making themselves known.
Santa Claus, you know, when you go to see Santa Claus with your son or something, and they want you to do it by the professional photographer, but you're right. Sort of standing off to the side, snapping a photo, and the elves yell at you.
Right.
You know, that's happened to me. I got yelled at by an elf, but he was a tall elf.
You had it coming.
So all the captains were there,
right?
Which is weird. So you had like Scott Bakula on the dais. You had. Wow, you had Patrick Stewart up there. You had William Shatner. That's pretty cool. Now all of them are technically, I guess they're technically still alive in the Star Trek universe. I mean, I guess except Kirk, right? Because I'm surprised he was even there, right? Because he's been killed. He's still stuck in the Nexus. So it's incredible that they mm-hmm. managed to get him out of the Nexus and into Wizard World.
Right. Yeah. Never underestimate these people from Wizard World. God knows what they're up to.
Now, I understood from listening to the trending show that you were surprised that there weren't a lot of people there.
Well, what I want to say by that is I was surprised by who was interested in who. Because to me, and I am not a huge Star Trek fan, but the idea that all the captains were all in one place, and they must have, I have to imagine, there must have been a package you could buy to get your picture taken with all five of them. Because that's how they really make their money. You know, I overheard somebody saying they paid $250 to have their photo taken with Patrick Stewart. And, like, they were like, they had an area where you could pick the photos up. The guy was, like, 3 feet away from him. Like, it wasn't like they were even acting like they were buddies. Like, at one end of the photo was Patrick Stewart, and at the other end was this guy. You could have photoshopped that. You know, so I have to imagine that there was some insane package that you could pay to be photographed with all five of them. I would love to know what that was. But
I would pay for it.
Right. You would just think with the worldwide popularity of Star Trek and everything else, that area where those five people were assembled should have been bananas.
Right. Like, that's like all the presidents in one place. Right? I mean, really. I mean, in fact, maybe it's even more impressive because they live on alternate timelines and they, you know, they're somewhere alive.
One's in the Nexus.
One's stuck in the Nexus, right. That being Captain Kirk. Jean-Luc Picard is still going on strong. And then one's not even born yet and he's there. So, I mean, it's an impressive array of individuals. I'd take my picture with him.
Right. I would guess you paid over $1,000 for that, to just stand there for 5 seconds while someone snapped a photo, you and the five Star Trek captains.
Now, would you ask? Like, if you had an opportunity to ask, if you could go down the line, I mean, I pick out, you know, maybe two questions, right? You get one to ask of Patrick Stewart,
and
you get one to ask of William Shatner. You give me yours, and I'll give you mine.
Oh, see, I'm so inexpert at this. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't even know, even if I had all day. Like, if I knew they were coming months in advance, maybe I could come up with something. On the fly, I couldn't come up with anything.
Well, is there something interesting or fascinating that you would be interested to know about these guys? I mean, I not that it necessarily relates to Star Trek, right?
I see. Yeah, you know, I actually, there's a part of the Priceline website that I have an issue with. In their frequently asked questions. And Shatner, I don't know if you know this, but he does the Priceline negotiator.
Right. I mean, he kicks ass. So if you have a problem with the website, he'll go to that person and physically kick their ass.
Mm-hmm. I did like, by the way, I think there were like three options, or at least by Sunday, there were only three options left. If you wanted one of the William Shatner photos, because he would only sign – you couldn't bring your own thing. You had to buy it from the Wizard World convention and he would sign that. There was like one of him from one of the Star Trek movies in that like deep red satin coat.
I'm curious. Now, which one was it? I have to imagine it's probably from – I'm going to say this. It's probably from The Final Frontier, the film that he directed.
It could
be. There was a lot of like beauty shots of him in that photo, and a lot of the stuff that I always see online of him in the Star Trek red maroon –
Yeah,
you know, the maroon get-up is from that film.
Right. You could choose from that, one of him from T.J. Hooker, and Priceline negotiator.
Get out of here.
It was like him doing the kung fu pose, and it had the Priceline logo right on it. Like, I was amazed that – now, maybe all the good photos had been taken. You know, there might have been 9 to pick from originally, but – I was stunned seeing that. Like, the Priceline negotiator? Is that what people are coming thinking that he is?
See, I would have rather – I mean, I would rather have the 1960s, him in the yellow – like a
Of course.
That's what I want, right? I want the original. I want the 1960s shirt, the velour shirt that he was wearing with his – you know, his publicity photo from – that's what I want, right? I want that publicity photo with the bridge behind him.
Right.
I don't want, you know, fat Kirk. It's sort of, you know, if you had a chance to meet Elvis, right, would you rather have a photo of like thin, hot Elvis or fat Elvis?
Mm-hmm.
It's a no-brainer, right? Like last night, my son and I, you know, my son's namesake is Miles Davis, right?
Oh, I didn't, I had no idea.
And, my favorite jazz musician and greatest.
Oh, he was a jazz musician. Mm-hmm,
perhaps. Some argue with that. Perhaps the greatest trumpet player the world has ever seen. So last night I thought, all right, my son's at an age now where he can, you know, he likes music and he dances around and plays like a little drum set and thing. And he kind of, so I'm like, you know, let's play some Miles Davis stuff. So I was, you know, going through YouTube and just throwing stuff on AirPlay up to my Apple TV. And we were watching all kinds of live performances of Miles Davis, which I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd never seen any of these things. And so playing some early stuff with him and John Coltrane, and I'm, you know, my son was just flipping out, you know, Miles Davis, trumpet. And he was grabbing things to pretend he was playing the trumpet. It was great. And then there were some older stuff, right? It's like the color footage of Miles Davis with like the long hair, and he just looked like
Racist.
He's like one, you know, he's like one coronary artery clogged away from a heart attack. And, you know, I'd rather watch the black and white footage of him like svelte with the quintet than the old like jazz fusion stuff, you know,
right.
Where he's like about to keel over. Just me. I'd rather have thin Kirk and thin Miles Davis.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you.
Well, look at Mike Nesmith, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you had an opportunity to meet Mike Nesmith –
right.
Based on what you and I were talking about on The Grizz here a few months ago with all those YouTube videos of Mike Nesmith, where it literally looks like Nesmith's grandfather.
Right. He looks like my dad's dad. He does.
Right.
Which is crazy. No, like, in my mind, there's only like two valid incarnations of him. There's the monkey's version with the green wool hat and like the 8-button shirt, right? With the crazy belt buckle and the bell bottoms. Like, there's monkey's Mike. And then there's kind of like solo Mike, which to me ends at the Brit Fest. Like, the way he looked at the Brit Fest in 1992 is like the last recognizable version of Michael Nesmith. When I see pictures of him now, even though you can still sort of see it in his face, it's not really him to me.
Right.
Like, that does not, that's my grandfather. Like, that's, that's not him. I did notice this too. You know, at these conventions, Wizard World, it's not just meeting celebrities, right? There's comic book dealers. There's bootleg DVD dealers by the gaggle. There's every type of memorabilia you could think of. And one guy specialized in, like, autographed promotional photos. So, like, if you needed to have, like, Julie Newmar's headshot from 1968 signed by her, this guy has it. And, wow, was he trumping out the monkey's stuff.
Really?
Like, clearly the death of Davy Jones had been a tremendous boon to his business. And the prices were just crazy. And, of course, all he had Davy and Peter. He didn't have Mickey or Mike. But, I was amazed because, you know, there was a time where you couldn't find that kind of stuff anywhere. Really, it was unfortunate because of the recent passing of Davy Jones. They did have one thing that I thought was really, really cool. A guy had done some paintings. Probably, whether he was inspired by the theme of the five captains or not, but these were huge. These were the kind of things like you put in your living room, if this was what you put in your living room. Like an oil painting of all the captains together. Then his next one was a painting of all the first officers. Then one of a painting of all the medical officers together. Like, and did that for every variant that you could think of in the Star Trek universe. And to see all those, and they were huge paintings. It was really, really cool. I think they started at like maybe $600 or $700 a pop.
Wow. I would ask him, thank you for asking, what I would ask Captain Kirk up on the – I don't know what I would ask Patrick Stewart, but maybe I do. But if I'm always curious about sort of extracurricular things as it related to Star Trek and his fame within Star Trek, right? I don't want him to give me a get a life comment back.
Right.
You know,
that's your big concern.
Right. Well, actually, maybe that would be pretty cool. Like the time I got yelled at by what's his name from Aerosmith? Steve Tyler. But I'll tell you about that in a minute. But so I would ask him, I don't know if you know this, but from the movie Halloween?
Yes.
The Michael Myers mask?
Yeah.
Do you know that that is Captain Kirk?
Wow, you know what? Like, I think you told me that ages ago, and I long since forgot.
Isn't it crazy? And if you think about it, and you're like, yeah, of course it is, right? Like, who else would it be? Now, it's slightly altered, of course, for the movie, but I was always curious. I mean, this is one of the most, you know, terrifying guys in all of horror film history. What did he feel? And first of all, did he, like, get any money from that? Did he sue because it was his likeness being used in that? I mean, I don't think it was a Paramount film, right, which I think owns the Captain Kirk likeness. I think Paramount Pictures, I think owns the rights to it. So I don't know. I'd be curious. I'm just curious, like, was he bothered by that? Right, here is this, like, Captain Kirk face being used to terrorize children. It became, like, the iconic movie of the late 70s into the 80s for horror films. Like, would that have bothered him? Or was he just, did he find it funny?
Well,
or is it far enough removed that maybe it didn't overflow to him?
Right. Like, that would be the most interesting thing. Like, can you imagine that you're the person telling him that?
Right.
Like,
he didn't
right,
know.
He'd just be like, no, I don't believe that.
Right.
You know, you're lying. Like, security, remove this lunatic from my line. Like, that would be the best, that you get to, like, break that to him.
I would like to know that.
You know, Wizard World goes all over the country, and usually whoever their main guests are, they do try to get them so that they keep it consistent in every city for that year's tour. So it is entirely possible that the five captains thing is going to be repeated at other stops, because this is one of the early ones. You know, the Wizard World stuff runs all through the summer, even late into the year. You know, so
Yeah.
There's still a good chance, I think, that you might be able to. If you really, like, that's the thing that's going to make your life complete, being photographed with the five captains. Like, I think you could probably get that done if you had to.
I'd like to be photographed with the five captains or the gay Green Lantern. Let's talk about that in a minute. Hey, first, let's pause, though, and thank one of our show sponsors this week. Why don't you tell us about the good folks over at Gazelle.com? Because, you know, the big Apple event, only a week away.
There's an Apple event, is there?
Yeah, Worldwide Developers Conference. And going on right now this week, as I mentioned, E3, the big entertainment electronics expo out in Los Angeles. So you've got the Nintendo press conference. You've got the Microsoft press conference. You've got the Sony press conference. And I'm looking at the schedule. You've got all these games, Assassin's Creed 3, Tomb Raider is back, Call of Duty, Black Ops, Star Wars, 1313. Everyone's buzzing about this new Star Wars game. Mm. It's going to be like the big deal, big, big deal. You know how last year was Batman? This year, the Star Wars game, everyone's talking about it. So what do you do with your old game systems, your old consoles, your old, you know, Apple devices as these big new conferences unfold? You gotta go to Gazelle.com and get some cash for them, right?
Absolutely. So go over there right now. Just take a minute out of your day and find out what the gadgets you have in your house right now are worth. You might be surprised. You're going to get a great value for these, and you want to do it now. Because the longer you hold on to these things, the more value they lose. So get the very best offer that you can. That offer, whatever it is that they offer you, stays valid for a full month while you decide if you want to part with your used consumer electronic. And then off it goes. They pay for the shipping. They make it incredibly simple. I know, and Clayton knows as well, because we've both gotten rid of gadgets through Gazelle.com. You get that fast payment from them, the check in the mail, money in your PayPal, or the Amazon.com gift card, which comes with 5% more when you choose that as your option. It's incredibly simple, and we could all use a couple extra bucks, whether it's just pocket money so that you can go over to Rita's, or because you want to upgrade to that next latest and greatest gadget, which you know they're about to start coming fast and furious. Whatever the case may be, go see Gazelle.com. We couldn't make this podcast if they didn't support us.
So listen to the Weekly Long Box, which is our comic book show hosted by Leonard and Todd. They do a fantastic job. And it's funny listening to that show because I learned so much about comic books. And I think I'm fairly up on comic books. Mike thinks he's fairly up on comic books. No, these guys read every stinking book. And so I think in the last episode, they were talking quite extensively about this in DC, which on Wednesday of this week, you're listening to this maybe Tuesday, it's tomorrow then, Wednesday of this week, Green Lantern is coming out of the closet. It's part of this Earth 2 series that's going on sale. So it's sort of like, an alternate timeline, I guess, for Green Lantern, where Alan Scott is the gay Green Lantern. Is that right?
Well, you know more than I do. But I can tell you this, you know, ever since the relaunch of New 52, all the old continuity has been disregarded. They are basically remaking their universe from scratch. And previously, you know, DC went through over the years where they acquired all these other characters, you know. For example, a great example of that is Captain Marvel, or commonly Shazam. He did not belong to DC Comics, right? Fawcett published that independent.
Who is this?
Captain Marvel,
oh,
Shazam.
Oh, yeah, right.
But later on, after a lawsuit and they were forced to stop publication and some stuff lapsed, they bought them. In the same way that the Charlton Comics characters like Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, and those characters, these were all bought and then like assimilated into the DC universe. For a long time, though, they allowed them to exist on their own planet so that, for example, the Charlton characters wouldn't run into Batman and Robin. They were considered to be on different Earths. And Earth 2 was one of these Earths. So I have to believe that, once again, this is like a fracturing into what the DC Comics people used to refer to, this term might be outdated, as the multiverse. That there were multiple Earths where there were superheroes, and these Earths did not necessarily intersect each other. So you could have a Green Lantern on Earth 1 who does not know the Green Lantern from Earth 2, etc., etc. This original Green Lantern, the creation of Martin Modell, who I'm 99% sure was like a row over from us at Wizard World, and was probably, as he was reading this news, sobbing into his hands, as kind of a publicity stunt, I guess, or an effort to make themselves more modern or more relevant, they've decided that this character of theirs who's been around for, I don't know, 60 or 70 years, he's going to come out of the closet.
Hmm.
That Alan Scott, the Green Lantern, is gay.
Yeah, of course, Hal Jordan is the other alter ego for Green Lantern, quite a ladies' man, as you know, played by Ryan Reynolds in the most recent film. So, but Earth 2 is the alternate universe in the DC world. So,
it's a publicity stunt,
right?
Yeah, Alan Scott's the Golden Age Green Lantern. He is the original Green Lantern, but the iconic one, the one we all know and the subject of that movie, is Hal Jordan. Now, there's tons and tons of other Green Lanterns as well. But Alan Scott, I think, to be fair, is like a D-lister, even though he's one of my very favorites. I love that Justice Society family of characters. Like,
right.
You know, when they first started hinting at this, there were all these stories like Batman is gay. Like, that was the headline.
Right, they're all gay.
Right. Like, of course they're going to pick somebody. Like, in the same way, you know, when they decided to make Batwoman into a lesbian, like, Batwoman hadn't existed for decades.
Right.
And they're like, oh, we'll drum her up and she'll be a lesbian.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this wasn't the first time they'd done it. I remember a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember, it was Marvel that did this a few years ago with North Star, didn't they?
That was quite a while ago. That was in the 90s, you know. That
with
was
X-Men,
like mid-90s, right? North Star from Alpha Flight, which is – and he's a mutant, so he's kind of part of the X-Men family, him and his sister Aurora.
Right, so it was like, who could we find that wouldn't really alter things much?
Right.
And who really no one cares about? Let's choose North Star. And interesting, I mean, it made sense that North Star was gay, right? Because his mutant power is that he creates scented candles.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So that was a bit of a tip-off.
He makes Yankee candles.
Mm-hmm. They really did, like, could you, if you look at, like, the strata of this, and I'm curious what you think, because, you know, I think the success of the Avengers movie has really altered things and everything else. In the 60s, I think the premier Marvel superhero team was the Fantastic Four. They were always marketed as the top team. Then it was the Avengers, then maybe a step down the Defenders or the X-Men before they got hot. And then you started to get down into the lower groups, right? Like down there's the champions, down the keep going.
Alpha Flight.
So exactly. So, you know, things started to change then as the X-Men mounted popularity throughout the 70s and really became popular. By the 80s, the X-Men were really like that they were the team. And now it's the Avengers. Even though the Avengers have always had a super awesome lineup and has always sold well, these last few years the Avengers have been the thing. Alpha Flight has never been the thing. Alpha Flight's down there with Power Pack.
Right.
You know, like they're they're at the very, very bottom. So, you know, when the editors must have gotten together and they're like, listen, I think we can get some publicity if we have one of the characters come out of the closet. Who does no one care about? What book is on the verge of cancellation that maybe this can buy us a few more months? What's that? Alpha Flight's about to be canceled? Let's turn one of them.
Right.
Shaman? Sasquatch? Vindicate? No, North Star. The scented candle one. Get him.
Mr. Terrific? Yeah, let's grab him. Let's go back. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's obviously a publicity stunt. That's all this is, right? I'm curious, yes, though. I mean, I think the new 52, I'm wondering if the steam is still strong with that one. Because I for a while I was buying them and then I kind of ducked out of them for a little bit. I find that when I'm about to take a flight, mm-hmm, I download a whole bunch of the issues that I missed. So on the iPad, it's brilliant. It looks great. And so now with the Retina display, whew, the art just looks amazing. So I've downloaded, you know, I'll download the most recent detective issues that I've missed over the past few months and download the most recent Batman and then go, you know, Flash and so forth and go on my flight. But I'm curious if it's still going strong, you know, or if there are a lot of people like me who, you know, just sort of let it trail off. Have you heard anything on numbers or anything?
No. Like, wow, I'm so disconnected from that. And I bet you we can find more info probably on the weekly long box about what the drop-off rate has been. But I stand by when this all first started to happen. You know, we even had Leonard and Todd here on the program with us a couple episodes talking about this and everything else in the world of comic books. I stand by my original theory, which is eventually they will give up on this and they'll either erase this other timeline from the continuity, the new 52, or they'll fold it back into the previously existing DC universe and go back to it.
Hmm.
And I stand by that. I think that's what's going to be the end game of this.
Could be. Although I think at the end of this year or towards the fall, they're about to roll out the prequels of the new 52. So for those who are interested in a little bit of backstory, they're going to get like issues zero, I think is how it's going.
I know, right? Ugh.
So you get that info there.
And you want to speak about tantamount to treason, shall we? And I know we weren't. Have you heard about that they are putting out the Watchmen prequels? They might already be out.
No, are they?
Like, you've got to leave that alone, DC. Stop going back to that well. Now, of course, if you've read Watchmen, I think you realize you can never do a sequel to Watchmen. You cannot. You must leave it alone. So I guess finally, after all these years, because they want to keep milking that cow, they decided that instead what they'll do is prequels, telling like the origins of all the characters in there, which maybe isn't the worst idea in terms of making those characters more compelling, but I do feel like Watchmen's one of those things that you just need to leave alone.
Yeah, I don't think we need prequels for it. I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It appears that things like Prometheus, which is obviously a prequel to Alien, is going to work. From all the buzz about it, it's going to work. But what, Star Wars? Can you think of any prequels that have really worked? I mean, would
you think of Batman Begins as a...
Well, is that a prequel? No.
Right. It's like a reboot, you know. It's just a retelling of the franchise, not like a prequel in the true sense.
I think, is Star Trek, the newest Star Trek film, a prequel?
See, that to me is a reboot, you know. Like, it's not trying to say that it's part of the pre-established continuity, which is definitely the case with these Watchmen prequels.
Yeah.
They're saying you are expected to incorporate this into the accepted canon.
And I guess when I mean successful, I don't mean box office, because we knew that the Star Wars films would, you know, have box office success. Mm-hmm. But critically, right? I actually put forth this question on Twitter last week or a few weeks ago because, you know, it was Star Trek 35th anniversary this past week. Mm-hmm. And so there was, you know, Spike TV was running the marathon. So we're sitting there. I watched A New Hope, then watched Empire Strikes Back, and then a part of Jedi sort of back to back to back. I did not move off the couch. And man, Empire is fantastic, isn't it? Oh, such a good film. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you throw the prequels into the mix of it, and you're like, God, these are just separate films, just crap. So I put forth this question on Twitter last week, which was, is it possible to keep my son from ever knowing those exist? Right? Because you know that the Jar Jar character is, I mean, it's hard to hide from, right? And so mm-hmm. once Jar Jar comes into the mix, my son's going to be like, Jar Jar, you know, he's going to like that. And I don't want him to like that. Mm-hmm. Now, is that bad of me? Does that make me a bad father?
No. I think the fact that you stayed on the couch all weekend when your lawn needed you.
No, I did that too. I squeezed that.
I think I know you did. No, I think you'd be doing him a terrific service, actually.
You know, because the people were arguing with me because I know that there are a lot of people who like this Clone Wars show.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, and so apparently it's pretty good. So but people are saying, no, you can't do that because then he won't know what the Clone Wars stuff is about.
What's the price you pay?
Because I'd like to have him, you know, watch the Clone Wars stuff. I think he'd enjoy that. I know that my friend's kids do, so I figured, well.
Oh, so it's like pure that. Pressure.
It is pure pressure. You know, it's funny. When you go to like the bookstore, I was in Barnes & Noble with my son the other day, and you know, you look in the kids section, and I was looking for some Star Wars stuff because, like, you know, this is an area he's not well-versed in yet, right? Mm-hmm. He understands Marvel and DC. He understands the characters that he likes a lot, you know, huge Iron Man fan and Spider-Man fan, Batman, everything. And now I've drilled down to the point where, you know, he knows Robin, Nightwing. Like, he's able to pick out these, you know, lower tier characters, I guess. But he doesn't know anything about Star Wars. He has no idea. He doesn't understand a lightsaber. He doesn't understand stormtroopers, Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, any of that. And in the kids section of Barnes & Noble, it's all Clone Wars likenesses of Star Wars, right? It's that sort of squared jaw look.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
There's no like sort of traditional Star Wars stuff. It's all Clone Wars stuff. So I don't know where you'd find that other stuff. If you want to get them up to speed, you're going to have to go Clone Wars.
I guess. I don't know, though. Like, they just – it'd be interesting to talk to someone who experienced them in that order. They watched the prequels as it was meant to be, like 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5, and 6. Unlike us who watched 4, 5, and 6, waited what felt like a lifetime, and then watched 1, 2, and 3 to our collective disappointment. It'd be really interesting to get the point of view of someone who watched them correctly, and that's how they experienced what their take on that whole universe is. Because the original three, you know, New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi, to me, that's the only part of the story you need. The rest of it's crap.
I agree. Well, there was some other comic book news this week. I'd love to get your take on it. Well, first of all, one of our listeners on Twitter, Eric Hoff, wrote us. He said, it's official. As of Friday, the Avengers is the third on the list of the all-time domestic box office.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Eric, for sharing that with us.
And there was, I don't know if you see that, saw the article, a couple entertainment places posted, including superherohype.com, that there's like a logistical reason why it will never overtake number two.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was very interesting. It said it has landed at number three, and based on, for these reasons, and I was just kind of glossing over it. It was like it'll never overtake number two. Like Avatar is number one on the all-time worldwide box office list. Number two is Titanic, and number three is Marvel's The Avengers. And they had like a very data-rooted reason why it will never become number two. And I was like, huh? And I didn't have time to go back and like reread it and let that information like soak into my brain.
Damon Lindelof. How would you describe Damon Lindelof?
Handsome.
Handsome. Creative.
Right. You know, he was one of the masterminds behind Lost. So a very creative guy that works in the entertainment industry who every once and again, you know, he just he's tied to interesting projects. Is there something really interesting that he's involved with now?
Yeah. So, you know, he's obviously, as you mentioned, Lost, Prometheus, which is now about right. to hit, you know, about to hit theaters. And I can't wait to see that. Star Trek II is filming now. Mm-hmm. Cowboys and Aliens he did, I think, last summer, mm-hmm. right, or last fall, which was a kind of a flop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it's popular and it's science fiction released over the past few years, Damon Lindelof has probably been involved in it in some capacity. Mm-hmm. So people are curious, obviously, what is going to happen with Star Trek II, but he wants – like because it's already going. Like he's – you know, he's on to his next project, right? Mm-hmm. Like during C-Rex last night or this weekend – you were already planning your next events, right? You got to move on, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you've always got to be working ahead of the schedule. It's not like, well, we only planned this far.
Right. Next weekend, we don't have that booked yet. So you right. got, you know, you guys got stuff lined up. And so he is, I really think this is fascinating. I do not know much about this character, but he wants to adapt a character that he says not many people know about, and maybe saw as a lame character that couldn't carry his or her own movie. And I like this idea, right? It's a bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. But it could go south also, right? Because no one gives a crap about a character. He wants to adapt Iron Fist. And he wants to create an Iron Fist franchise.
Right, but you know, there's been talk of this for years. Like right after that first Star Wars prequel, they were saying Ray Park is attached to an Iron Fist film, that he was going to be Iron Fist. I mean, this has got to be 10 years now that they've been talking about Iron Fist. Like, that is one of those weird Marvel properties that's, like, always in development, like Man-Thing. And you're just thinking, like, do we really need a Man-Thing movie? Right. But Iron Fist could be very cool if they did him right, you know?
Right. I mean, he's a martial arts hero. I think it could be done well, but I wonder if it runs the risk of being like a Jackie Chan style movie.
I don't know. I love Jackie Chan. Like, you can't put a bad mouth on Jackie Chan to me.
But, no, I do too. But you know what I mean? Does it become jokey? Mm-hmm. Does it become? It'd be apples and oranges, right? To me, mm-hmm. Iron Fist is not like a jokey. I'm going to use a ladder to do this kind of trick and use this paint can here. And
right. Well, you know, let me put it to you this way. Like, Iron Fist, you know, first became like a cult classic type character in the Marvel Universe from his 70s book, Power Man and Iron Fist, where he was like on a, you know, if Luke Cage, Power Man, is played by Chris Tucker in the movie, then I have some concerns that it's going to turn into a Jackie Chan film. Provided that Luke Cage either doesn't appear or is not cast as Chris Tucker or any Wayans brother, I think we'll be okay.
Right. So if it's a solo film or someone comes on later, you know, we'll see if Luke Cage joins the cast. But so that's what Damon Lindelof wants to work on, which I think is – which is kind of fascinating.
That is – it's very, very interesting. I would go see that. And I don't really even like Iron Fist. Like, you know, there are some of those Marvel characters, the lower tier ones that have like devoted cult followings. Like Moon Knight is so one of those. Like – Moon Knight has a huge following. But right. Does that translate into a successful film? I don't know. And like, I kind of like Moon Knight. I have no opinion on Iron Fist. But even saying that, I'd go see that movie.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, especially if Lindelof has his hands in it somehow. I'd definitely mm-hmm. go see that.
Right on.
There's some Avengers news, and we'll get to that in just a second. But I think we should pause here And thank our next show sponsor this week, our friends over at Cobra.com, the makers of a number of great products, including the Cobra Tag System. Mm-hmm. The Cobra Tag System basically prevents you from ever having to lose your keys or lose your smartphone because it works with your iOS phone, it works with your Android phone, and they speak to each other. So if your keys are lost in the couch, you just launch the app, beep, 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 you find your keys in the couch based on the Cobra Tag System caught on the keys. It's great. And then vice versa, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And not only this, the Cobra Tag System is ingenious, obviously. This two-way locator system. And you can put that Cobra Tag on anything. It doesn't have to be your keys. You want to put it on your laptop bag. You want to put it on some other item that you're always misplacing or you're worried you might misplace. You can protect any item you want with that Cobra Tag. But the Cobra Tag and one of their other great products, the Cobra iRadar system, they make great Father's Day gifts. These are great gadgets that any dad will appreciate. The Cobra iRadar system makes you a safer and more alert driver. You've heard both Clayton and I extol the virtues of this system, and here's why. Because it's made us safer and more alert drivers. And it could do the same for somebody that you know. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you go over to their website, Cobra.com, you'll find that there is a vast array of technological greatness waiting over there, and at least one or two great gift ideas for Father's Day for somebody that you know are probably poking around. Take just a minute and check them out. They made all these awesome demo videos so you can see exactly what each product does. You'll love it. Go over and check them out, especially if you hate G.I. Joe. Cobra.com.
Indeed. Hey, there's a new G.I. Joe film coming out. Hey, quick question for you.
Mm.
You know, I see my son, and he walks around. He wants to wear his little monkey hat. He's got like this little – it's almost like a Gilligan-style monkey hat.
Mm-hmm.
Monkey hat, and he wants to, you know, put it on because he enjoys, you know, having monkeys on his head.
Sure.
If he were 16 and he wanted to wear the monkey hat, it wouldn't be cute anymore. It would be an affectation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it would be the thing that, like, I think you for a little while had that affectation with you were wearing, like, the Nesmith hat.
Very much so, yes. Yeah, all through my college years, especially. Like, on occasion in my high school years, but I wore that no matter how hot it was outside all through college.
Blisteringly hot. And you'd be like,
I'd wear a blue wool hat. I would. Oh, my God, yeah. I'd sweat. My forehead was always breaking out in zits and whatnot. Like, I wore a blue wool hat on my head no matter how hot it was.
You're determined. And then you wanted to be like that guy, right? Everyone knew you as that guy. You were the guy with the wool hat.
Right.
Do you know Mike? Oh, yeah. Oh, is he the guy that wears the wool hat in August?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's him.
He's an idiot.
At what point, I mean, it's funny, like, at what point something becomes an affectation, right? Is it like when you turn 12 and you're trying to assert your individuality?
I don't know there's a hard and fast age, but, you know.
Because now it's cute, right? He doesn't know. He just likes monkey hat.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to put on the monkey hat. But it's certain at some point, then you're going to – that like that switch is going to be flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And now he'll want to wear it so that he gets – people acknowledge him for that hat.
Mm-hmm.
Like you with the Nesmith hat.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's a hard and fast age for that, but I agree with you. At some point, it becomes an affectation. I think you're 100% correct.
And does it then switch back? Like now, I'll wear a Batman t-shirt, and I put it on because I want to wear it, not because I really care what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably a few years ago where, like, you wouldn't wear a Batman t-shirt, right? It was kind of like, man, what a nerd. He's going to wear that shirt. Now it's like – it's
really?
Cool.
Do you think?
I think
Batman's always cool. I don't think there was a time when Batman was not cool.
I think there was a time when it was maybe less cool to wear comic book related shirts and characters.
Well, yes, that I agree with. But I'll tell you what. I remember this. I had an X-Factor t-shirt, which was
That was a great shirt.
It was a really cool shirt. Late 80s revival of the original X-Men in their own book. I had that, and I had a Ghost Rider shirt from the Texiera Saltarez book. And I wore those with pride. Like, that was my I'm a comic book nerd statement. Because in our high school, people were not wearing X-Factor and Ghost Rider t-shirts to school. Like, that was not done. Even, like, the year – now, granted, we weren't in high school yet. But in 89, when everybody you knew had something with the Bat logo on it, when it was, like, the summer of Batman – even then, it was not necessarily cool to be wearing other superhero stuff. Like, you could get away with Batman, and that was it.
Yeah, that's my point, right? I had that Batman hat. Do you remember that? It was like it was a weird color, almost like a purplish, and then black, and then it had the big Bat logo from the 89 film right on the front of it.
Yeah.
And I still have it because I dug some stuff out the other day, and I found that hat. And you know, I barely wore it. First of all, it was one of those stiff baseball caps, you know, that's hard, like hard to bend. I like the floppy kind now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it had that meshing in the front, what made it stand up kind of like a trucker. Mm-hmm. And you knew you were wearing it. We would go to like Dorney Park, or we'd go to like an amusement park or something like that. In fact, I think that's where I got it, was like Dorney Park. And you'd wear it, and I don't know, it was like a little twinge of self-awareness that I, you know, you know what I mean? You knew you were wearing it. It was like, I don't know. I don't know if the girls, the other 14-year-old girls are going to like me in this hat, or however right. old we were. You know, they're going to go for the guy who's wearing the football jersey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, like I wore my Batman T-shirt yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not ashamed of it. I got that one of the new, you know, from Old Navy. They're like $12, and it's cool. It's like a classic logo. I love it. It's a well-made shirt. I'll wear it. I don't care. I'll wear it underneath a zip up. I'll wear it out and around.
Of course, you'll wear it under a zip up. Well, we really went through a whole arc of it where, you know, when we were growing up, the only way you could really get like the merchandise with the iconic symbols on them, like the logos, was like in your underoos.
Right.
There was no shirt. You couldn't go to a store and just buy a gray shirt with the Batman logo printed on it. That's like, I don't know why, but that was true of our childhoods. Like, you couldn't, no one thought that would sell. Right? Like, can you imagine that there really was a time when just putting a Superman logo on a blue shirt, no one thought that was a good idea. You can't go anywhere without seeing people with those Superman logo shirts. I've seen them a metallic color on camouflage. It was hideous. Like,
we were at Starbucks yesterday, 2 days ago. My wife and son picked me up at the train station, and you know, my son was not feeling really well, and he was real and real shy and just wouldn't talk. You know, he just wanted a hug. He was like being clingy and stuff. So I was like holding him, and we were walking out of the Starbucks, and there was a 20-something African American girl sitting there mm-hmm. in a Superman T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
and Miles goes, Superman, and she got all excited. She goes, he's my favorite, and she pointed to it, and she was like waving to my son, and they had like a little thing for a minute. It was cute, mm-hmm. you know. But here, a girl wearing a Superman T-shirt, you know, like it's not that uncommon,
mm-hmm. right? You know, but we went through that phase where if you wanted to be that person, you couldn't be.
Right.
And then there were some shirts out there, like that Ghost Rider shirt I had. It was not – that one wasn't particularly cool. Like it was like fluorescent pink, orange, and blue, like neon.
Yeah, that was not cool.
It was an ugly shirt, but you had to wear it. That was the way you said, I'm a comic book nerd. Now you walk down the mall. You go into Hot Topic. You go in there. They've got 50 different kinds of superhero shirts. You go to the very next store selling shirts. They've got 50 kinds. You walk into Target. They have a whole superhero section. Like, they're ubiquitous now.
Yeah.
So it is. It's very different. You know, I think it means something different than what it once did.
Because I think as a kid, you know, it was a badge of honor to be a comic book fan, you know, and it was certainly nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's weird because now that's the case, you know, it was like super nerdy to do that. Now it's ubiquitous, you know, and so many people just can get their hands on it. Maybe being a comic book character or being a fan of superheroes is not, I don't know. It's not off the beaten path anymore. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's mainstream, you know, geekery is now mainstream.
Yeah, you know, I think what we alluded to earlier really tells the tale. Marvel's The Avengers is the third biggest grossing motion picture worldwide. It is no longer niche. Like, those characters are no longer for those with only esoteric tastes. You know, they're everywhere. They're worldwide. And, you know, I think I might have mentioned this to you here on the Grizzer on one of the 5,000 other podcasts where we appear. Like, especially now that they've been realized in live action and they look realistic. For our kids growing up, you know, Clayton's son Miles and my son Elliot, for a while anyway, like, I think Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy, like the magic of that is nowhere near as powerful as the fact that for a while in their minds, you know, until they reach the age where they have that realization, those superheroes are real people.
Right.
Like, that's an amazing kind of magic.
It really is. And to see that my son, you know, can stand there and say, Philly baseball, and like want to watch that and then switch right over to, I want to watch Iron Man, you know, play with Iron Man. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that, that, you know, a kid can be well-rounded, you know, enjoying sports, but plus liking comic books. To me, it was like worlds away, right? When we were growing up, it was like either it was the kid that liked sports or it was the kid that liked comic books.
Hmm.
Now there's a lot of blending there. And maybe it's because of obviously the big success of the Avengers. Now there's a lot of talk about what will happen in the next run of the Avengers. And there was a lot of question as to what would happen with Coulson, right? Agent Coulson, who was if you haven't seen the Avengers yet, forget it, because we've already ruined a lot of things when we talked about our Avengers talk here. But he was killed.
Right. Let's ruin some more.
Right.
Right. This character who I think they did a really good job of subtly teaching you to like. They killed him. And so where does he go from here? I mean, he's contracted if they need him to appear in all the relevant movies. But, you know, where does it go from here?
Right. And so the question was, a lot of people, speculation right away was rampant on Twitter and everywhere else as to what happens to Agent Coulson, because people like him, right? Is he going to come back as the Vision?
Yes, that was I'm not surprised, because that was the first thing that went through my mind, too.
And he looks like him, doesn't he? I mean, he looks like
right. If they use his face, it'd be perfect.
Right. Well, Marvel CCO Joe Quesada has already said that it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And the actor agreed that it doesn't seem right to bring him back in future films as well, because Coulson, the actor Clark Gregg, basically says, you know, he says the Vision is cool. He said, but I'd hate to be like an android. If I got to come back in the films, because what he liked about being Agent Coulson is that he was a wisecracker and he's sarcastic. And the Vision is an android.
Yeah.
And therefore kind of flat.
Yes.
So don't look for that to happen. But will he come back in some capacity? Is there another way that he could come back?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, certainly, you know, it's wide open in terms of fiction storytelling. But that was the very first thing. Like, as soon as I saw that, like, Greg Clark interview or whatever it said, I was like, oh, my God, they're gonna, you know. In the same way that the Vision, who, as Clayton said, is an android character in the Avengers universe, when they originally he was a villain when he first showed up. The Avengers had to stop him. And then he was imprinted, in air quotes that you can't see, with the brain patterns of Simon Williams, who is another superhero called Wonder Man. Clearly, they could deviate from that. And right. imprint the Vision with Agent Coulson's brainwaves. And I don't know that too many people would really care, because I don't know that they felt like that part of the story is really essential to the Vision. But it would be super cool to see the Vision. Like, if you're talking about – and a lot of websites were doing this. You know, bloggers were doing this. Like, who are the Avengers that need to be added before we get to the sequel? And certainly one of the most demanded ones is the Vision. Like, there's no two ways about it. The Vision and the Scarlet Witch – and as we discussed, the Scarlet Witch kind of falls into this gray area, because as the daughter of Magneto, she may belong to the X-Men license to Fox.
Right.
But the Vision is clearly in the – he is firmly in the Avengers canon. But, you know, to get to the story of him, you need to be able to tell the story of Ultron. And to be able to tell the story of Ultron, then you need to tell the story of the man who invents Ultron, Hank Pym. And, well, it's really cool to think about, are we going to get – the Vision, are we going to get Tigra? Are we going to get, you know, all these other characters, whoever they might be? We really need Hank Pym, Marvel.
Right. We really do. And we need Giant Man and or Ant-Man.
And or Yellow Jacket.
True. Forget about Yellow Jacket.
Yeah. Best costume ever.
Will we see the Wasp?
I read – I don't remember this at all, but someone said that the Wasp has like a cameo in Thor, Captain America. And I was like, what? Like, did I miss that?
In both films?
No, like in one or the other. They were like, you know, the Wasp, who made a cameo in, you know, whether it was Thor or Captain America, I don't remember, was not reprised in the Avengers movie. And I was like, huh?
What?
Like, is she in like the back of like a restaurant somewhere? She's like, hi, I'm Jim. Like, and I missed that?
Like, right, or does she like fly by and someone swats at her and like, oh, there's a there must be a bug in here.
Right, like did I totally miss that? So, or it could have just been bogus, you know. Sometimes people make that sort of thing up. Like, obviously, there's been nothing whatsoever about that misinformation they put out there. That, oh yeah, you know, the Quicksilver Scarlet Witch Easter egg in the Avengers movie, false.
I mean, it's possible, right? It's possible, because I missed Hawkeye, for crying out loud, and Thor.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've seen Thor, I think 10 times.
Wow, that's a lot of times.
We bought it on iTunes, you know. In HD, so we've like my mother-in-law was here. She hadn't seen it. She loved it. She's like, I want to watch it again. So I think she watched it 3 times while she was here. You know, my wife likes it. So we've watched it a number of times. My son likes it. So I think we've seen it upwards of like 10 times now. I don't recall seeing the Wasp anywhere. But again, maybe it was so innocuous, I just didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it isn't that same scene where we see Hawkeye. Who the heck knows? I don't know. But it's, I don't care. And it wouldn't make sense, right, that it would be in Captain America. If anything, the whole film takes place back in the 40s.
Right, except for that end bit.
Yeah. And maybe she's in the end. Maybe I don't know. I have to go back and watch that too. So anyway, that was Vision talk. There was something else I thought would be interesting to quickly discuss here before we end things. The MTV Music Movie Awards last night with the Dark Knight Rises Movie Awards footage.
So did you watch?
No. Apparently, people were freaking out about it. And people were – before they saw the Dark Knight Rises footage, they were literally brought into a room and locked into a room and were not allowed to like leave, tell anyone about it before the show. There were like a few producers that were allowed to see it. And then I guess some people like leaked that it was awesome. And some of the stuff we're seeing now is looking more and more incredible. So
thank God.
Yeah, tell me about it. So I don't know, but apparently everyone's just flipping out about it. But you didn't happen to see the MTV Movie Awards. But this was like what they showed, like 7 minutes of it or something. Showed like 7 or 8 minutes of the film last night.
You know more than I, because yeah, I'm really to the point now where I know I'm going to see that movie, right? Like it's going to happen,
right?
But I don't want anything more ruined. Like I know just enough. Like if it comes out and it's bad or it comes out and it's good, it doesn't matter because I'm not going to watch it. I know I'm going to see the movie.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess is it? Yeah, what night? It was 9 p.m. and there's a lot of Batman stuff in it. And I guess they showed some, you know, Selina Kyle in action fighting. So who knows? I certainly didn't want to watch it. I certainly didn't want to see it. I'm trying to remain as far from it as I possibly can. But some of the new posters that have been released, you and I talked about last week, are pretty cool. And there's a really cool poster where Batman is like holding Bane by the chest and they're both about to punch each other in the face. It's a really cool looking poster. Did you see this thing?
Yes, yes.
So cool stuff. Any other news that's out there that we wanted to chat about?
I think that's about it. But, you know, thankfully, it's not far away now. You know, the remaining superhero films of the summer, The Amazing Spider-Man and The Dark Knight Rises, will be here soon, which is great. You know, I feel like a lot of theaters now, the 4-week run of The Avengers, a lot of places. Now, some theaters are keeping it. You know, usually when a film is this big of a success, even though most distribution deals are for 4 weekends, like, for example, their IMAX deal has expired. You know, you can't see it anymore in IMAX or things like that. But, you know, if you want to go catch it again or for whatever reason, obviously a lot of people are. A lot of people are seeing that film multiple times. But, you know, you really got that 4-week window to go in and check something like that out. So, and
Iron Man 3 production began.
Hmm.
Marvel Studios began production on Iron Man 3. And Thor got pushed back just a bit to the fall of next year. Thor 2 will be out in the fall of – and so that got pushed back. I'm not sure why that got pushed back.
Yeah. Yeah, they did alter some of those dates. And one of the dates that seemed – everybody seemed to be thinking this is the date of the Avengers sequel. They ended up announcing that's actually going to be something else. So it looks like it's not. It's going to be 2015 when the Avengers sequel happens.
Wow. So anyway – so that's going to wrap it up, I think. So we'll be interested to see what comes out of E3, if there's any interesting video game news we can chat about next week on the show. The new Nintendo Wii, which is coming out, the Nintendo Wii U, as it's being called, which I think is stupid. So that'll be interesting to see. And if anything comes out of the big Microsoft press conference, which is unfolding as we speak, what sort of games we can expect. And of course, the big Apple event next week, which I will be out there covering on Monday, is the keynote.
Oh, you're the keynote speaker. Congratulations.
I am. Yeah. Tim Cook said, "Hey, Clayton, you handle this."
That was nice.
You come up and release what we're going to release, iOS 6 and whatever else they're going to release. So we'll see there. So, but anyway, so we'll have that for you.
Could they save you some travel by just doing it at your place?
That would actually be cool. If I could do the keynote from over Skype, Skype video, I got a high def camera.
Right. But, you know, Skype's a little unreliable. You and I have wrestled with that for years.
People show up to the big hall out there at Moscone Center, and the keynote's about to begin, and the Skype connection fails.
Right.
Pretty entertaining.
Yeah, well, I just figure, you know, your lawn is so meticulously maintained. If you're just like, hey, Apple, you want to come over? Natalie will put out some lemonade.
Right. Like, I can't leave town for a week. Who's going to do the lawn?
Exactly. Exactly. So, if only you had a guy like Don Morris on speed dial. Well, I think that's going to do it for the Grizzly Bear Eye Cafe. Hey, you know, you can catch up with all the other stuff that we do here at the Grizzly Productions Network. For example, you know, except in the months when there's five Fridays. Every Friday, there's a new Daddy on Board that comes out. Every Sunday, there's a new trending show where I am the host and Natalie's the hostess. Clayton's also live on the weekends. He's on this thing called the Fox News Network. He's live every weekend for 91 consecutive hours on Fox and Friends weekends,
right,
where he is the anchor and everyone else on the show are barnacles.
Right. And I get to keel haul them. That's a good old reference. What book is that from? Treasure Island, right?
Yes. So, yeah, it's also it's also in The Joy of Flying, too. So thanks for tuning in to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. That's Clayton. I'm Mike. We'll be back. Hey, follow us on Twitter, all that jazz, blah, blah, blah. See you next week.
Joy of Flying, too. That's the second reference in 2 days. Mm-hmm. You managed to squeeze that one in on the trending show and here. Look it up on Wikipedia, Joy of Flying, too. We'll see you next week, everyone.
Bye.